This episode is brought to you in association with Janus Henderson Investors. It is a marketing communication, not for onward distribution, and the value of an investment can fall as well as rise, and you may not get back the amount you originally invested. Past performance does not predict future returns, and nothing in this episode should be construed as advice. Our discussion is for illustrative purposes only. References made to individual securities does not constitute a recommendation to buy, sell or hold any security, investment strategy or market sector, and should not be assumed to be profitable. Janus Henderson Investors, its affiliated advisor or its employees may have a position in the securities mentioned, not for distribution in European Union member countries. My name is Andrew Chiguri, and today I'm joined by David Smith, Portfolio Manager of Henderson High Income. Today, we'll be talking about the current state of the UK market, volatility within bond markets, and how David is navigating inflation and interest rate risk. We'll also look at what's going on within house builders and some of the dividend trends playing out in the UK market. David, welcome.
Thank you. Good to be here.
It's been a difficult environment for global equity markets. How has the trust performed over the period?
I guess if you look at the year to date to the end of September's NAV performance, it's down. So I guess in the context, disappointing that in absolute terms it's fallen. But I think if you look at some of the moves in overseas markets and global markets in generally, actually the UK has been relatively robust in that context, really.
What have been the key drivers of performance over that period of time?
We are an equity and bond hybrid trust. One of the things we've been positioned for is overweight equities relative to bonds going into this year, because we thought bonds were a bit overvalued, yields very low for us. And I think that position has obviously helped us relative to our own benchmark. I think what's offset that is probably the gearing. So in falling markets, gearing has a negative impact on performance, really. Over the longer term, you'd hope that markets move forward, so gearing helps. But actually, in some of this more volatile times, that detracts a little bit from those returns as well. I think within the equity portfolio, if you look at the stocks that have performed well, it's very much on the defensive end of the spectrum. So the likes of our holdings in British American Tobacco, Imperial Brands, Diageo, the spirits maker, Unilever, the consumer staple as well, you know, they've held up well within the market context. Whereas on the flip side, the more cyclicality within the portfolio, those holdings in domestics, whether it be retailers, house builders, or industrials and financials, have been a lot weaker in this market backdrop.
Though the FTSE has been relatively resilient compared to global peers, there's been a divergence in performance between large, medium, and smaller businesses as well. What has been driving that divergence, and has this provided you with any opportunities?
If you look at the FTSE All Share as a whole, it's down 8% year-to-date to the end of September. Larger companies within the FTSE 100 have been pretty resilient. So the FTSE 100 is only down just shy of 4%. That's relative to the FTSE 250, which is down more like 25%. You can actually dissect the FTSE 100 even further. If you look at the top 20 stocks, they're actually up 8% year to date, whereas the bottom 80 within that FTSE 100 is actually down 26%. So the UK market's resilience is very much skewed to the top 20 mega cap companies. So if you look at the names, you can probably guess why. You know, oil and gas, with the strength in the oil price this year, they've held up really well. Mining, again, certainly in the first half of the year, very strong commodity prices, big dividends from those companies. They've held up well in terms of their share prices. Banks as well, rising interest rate environment's very good for the banks. Because of where they're positioned for those really big mega cap stocks, you know, that's really meant that actually the UK market as a whole, on the headline level, has held up well. Now, as I said, once you drill down beneath the surface, actually the rest of the UK market has been pretty weak, in line with global markets. And I think that's where the opportunities are being thrown up, is more in the smaller mid-cap areas of the market, which is obviously priced in quite aggressively, the uncertain outlook that we're now looking at. Now, one thing I would say is a lot of those stocks that have been weak do have a cyclical bias. And I think seeing the derating on the valuations that the market ascribes to those businesses, what we're now waiting for is probably the earnings to catch up on. Now, analysts are typically quite slow in these sort of environments to downgrade their expectations, and companies also to downgrade their guidance. And I think it's only given that the macro outlook has weakened, we expect those downgrades to come through. So I think although there's opportunities there, I think it's slightly a little bit too early to maybe push. You know, at the margin, we are starting to add to that area of the market, but I think it's a bit too early to have any sort of wholesale changes at this stage, really.
Coming back to bonds, the trust can also invest in fixed income securities. With higher yields across maturities and central banks committed to rising interest rates, have you been looking to increase your bond exposure?
We have been, is the short answer. I think if you look at the start of the year, we were probably the lowest we've ever been in bonds. And all through the year, as yields have risen, we've actually been adding to some. Specifically more US investment grade credit, so always focusing on the highest quality corporate bonds we can find out there in good quality names, likes of Amazon, AbbVie, the US pharmaceutical company, Broadcom, the semiconductor business, etc. We still have a large underweight there. We saw the recent moves in UK gilts at the moment. So I think that, again, that's kind of thrown up a few more opportunities. I think the one thing that's, I guess, holding us back just yet is if you look at where credit spreads are at the moment, they've moved out a little bit from what were very tight positions. They're not as wide as, say, you would expect in a recessionary environment. So although the absolute yields are looking more appealing, they could go a bit further. Prices could fall more as those spreads widen further as we start pricing in a recessionary environment that's maybe more priced in the equity market or certain areas of the equity market at the moment. So we have done at the margin. We're just waiting for a bit more of a further move before we go any further.
I think one of the interesting trends we've seen play out over the last 12 or 18 months has been that relationship between bonds and equities. An increasingly stagflationary environment has been causing them to move in the same direction, but that's until recently. Are we beginning to see that decouple as the appetite for bonds increases and investors start to moderate their equity exposure a little bit?
I think, yeah, I mean, clearly in an absolute level, bond yields are much more attractive than where they've been pretty much over the last decade, it feels like. But I think you've got to put that in the wider context that big asset allocators, big pension funds, we've had a structural headwind, certainly in UK equities, where pension funds have been deallocating towards equities and specifically UK equities. If I think back 20 years ago, pension funds would typically have anywhere between sort of 50 and 70% in equities and a big exposure within that into UK. That's come down a long way over the last 20 years. I think one area of the market which, you know, more recently has done very well in a low bond yield environment is the allocation towards alternatives, towards private debt, private equity, etc. Now, there may be an argument to say, does that structural tailwind that they've had in that area of the market now go towards a structural headwind as people look to allocate more to more traditional public debt areas, given those yields are at much more attractive places? At the margin, maybe they do take a little bit of equity exposure out. But I feel more comfortable where we are today, having gone through that over the last 20 years, that there won't be this huge swathe of selling in the equity market, certainly not in the UK context.
So how has the trouble in the gilt and currency markets and the Bank of England's intervention affected the UK stock market?
Yeah, I mean, it clearly has been quite negative for equity markets. You saw quite a big move down in equity markets in September, which accelerated into the month end as a mini budget came out. The worries about the unfunded nature of the tax cuts within that mini budget that the government announced. We saw a spike in bond yields that has fed through into mortgage rates, and with banks having to pull mortgage rates because they couldn't reprice quick enough, basically. And they've come back onto the market at quite high levels versus what we've seen historically. And that has a knock-on impact to clearly what people think about the housing market. Some of the big detractors in September were the likes of the house builders. They look at Persimmon or Vistry, the ones we own, or the wider context, they've all been pretty weak. Elsewhere, anything related to the consumer, you saw retailers sell off quite aggressive as well. So people paying more for their mortgages, they've got less discretionary spending to go out, buy clothes, or anything housing related, new kitchens, things like that. Another area of the market that's been hit is really some of those sectors that are typically priced off bonds. So utilities, for example, seen this as a bond proxy sector as well. When bond yields rise, they typically come under pressure in terms of the value you pay for their ongoing cash flows. Similar to argument for real estate sector. So the likes of Land Securities, British Land, etc., the big FTSE 100 real estate companies, they've again been pretty weak in September. And I think thirdly, is probably financials as well, or what should I say, businesses with weaker balance sheets. You've seen them come under pressure. Clearly, if you've got a stretched balance sheet and you're having to pay more on your own debt costs, you know, that's going to come back to haunt you in terms of the cash flow you can generate for shareholders as well. So it's been quite a difficult market. There's only quite a select few of stocks that really outperformed in this market. But again, where we do have a bit of defensive bias within the portfolio, it's kind of helped a little bit at the margin, dampened down that hit, I suppose, the more cyclical, more housing exposed area of the portfolio.
I mean, just staying on house builders, previously they've been able to pass on rising costs further down the chain. However, as interest rates continue to rise, this pricing power could come under pressure due to the decline in, as you mentioned, their full affordability of housing and mortgages. What are you hearing about margin pressure from house builders at the moment?
I think you haven't yet, and I think that's a question of yet. It does feel that given where mortgage rates have gone, it's going to put pressure on housing prices, quite frankly. I mean, what the companies are saying that the underlying cost picture is probably easing the cost of timber is coming down, the cost of steel is coming down, etc. So you do have cost falling a bit. Wages are still a problem. You're still having to price it up, etc. The cost of your subcontracts, etc. I suppose what I would say is I think the market knows that. It's got there. That's why the share price has been so weak. So you have to take a step back and look at the valuation the market's putting on these businesses. A company like Vistry is already trading at quite a significant discount to its book value, i.e. the value of the land it holds in its balance sheet. My interpretation is the market is implying that they need to write down the value of that land, which is obviously linked to housing prices. Now, the size of that discount, it kind of implies that you need to see house prices come down more than they did in the global financial crisis, which I think is quite a extreme valuation, to say the least. I mean, there's obviously a lot of differences between now and then. You know, you haven't had this huge build-up of credit, as we did see in years leading up to 2007. Lending has been a lot more disciplined. I don't know the exact figures, but back in 2007, the proportion of 95% loan-to-value mortgages was huge. On Lloyds' book, you don't have that. It's minimal, really negligible at the moment. So I don't think you get that whole for sellers going into negative equity, etc., even if you do see house prices come down. And I think generally, although we're going through a cost of living crisis, consumers are under pressure. I think the area of the society which has mortgages is more the middle to higher earners in the UK. And they have still benefited from the pandemic boost of working from home, not paying your commuting bills and stuff like that. So they have bought up savings to help dampen down that pressure on mortgages, really. So I don't necessarily believe that if we do see a housing slowdown, it's going to be as bad as we saw in the GFC, basically.
I just want to talk about dividends for a moment. And looking over the last 18 months, the largest contributors to UK dividends have been concentrated within energy, financials, and mining sectors. Firstly, what percentage of income do these sectors represent within the portfolio? And how do you make sure that the portfolio is prudently diversified?
So those sectors typically pay, I think, about 22% of the trust income. And that compares to the overall FTSE All share of about 42%+. So we're clearly underweight those for making sure. And I think it's always a key, certainly for an income fund manager, is to make sure you have that diversification across the portfolio, because you don't want to be overly reliant on any one stock or sector, because clearly if dividend cuts come, then that creates quite a big hole in your revenue account to pay your own dividend to shareholders. So one of the advantages of investment trusts is you do have a board of directors, which you meet typically six times a year for Henderson High Income, that do get questions about the portfolio structure, the diversified nature of the portfolio, etc. So you've got the added checks, really, checks and balances within the structure of the trust. I think for Henderson High Income, we've also got a bond portfolio. And that really does help diversify that income. You saw that back in 2020 in the pandemic. Yes, it's only a small portion, but it's a portion that you didn't see any cuts to coupon payments, to dividends in the equity market there. I think thirdly, we're a relatively small trust, so we can move up and down the market cap scale. You know, again, if you're worried about dividend sustainability in the large cap, you know, it doesn't mean to say for a size of our funds, we can't put more allocated to that mid-cap area of the portfolio, really. So those are the kind of things we keep an eye on in terms of things we can point to while we're well diversified, really.
Surprisingly, so far in 2022, UK dividends have been stronger than expected, and that's based on resilient profits and margins from 2021. What is your outlook for dividends going forward?
Yeah, I mean, you've seen very strong recovery in market dividends over the last 2 years. A lot of that has been really driven by the mining sector. You've seen big growth in ordinary dividends, and you've seen special dividends on top of that. What I would say is, though, actually, is for the market level in general, that income level, we're only back to 2015 levels. So I think there's still a big runway of recovery to come through, really. Mining sectors, their dividend payments are based off earnings, which is based off commodity prices. And I think clearly, given commodity prices have come down now over the summer months, it feels like those dividends in the short term have probably peaked. But when you look across the wider market face, dividends are only just recovering, really. If you think about the energy sector, given the oil price is still high, it's likely to remain high for a protracted period, and that's going to support very strong cash flows and dividends there. The banks' dividends, although they've grown quite well this year, they're still below where they were pre-pandemic. So I think those sort of sectors will take up the baton, really, of dividend recovery, dividend growth, while the mining sector dividends will come down. Once you net those two off, then actually I think you're still going to see dividend growth for the market as a whole going through into next year, just not at the same sort of growth levels we've seen over the last 2 years. So I'm more looking at a growth level between, I think low to mid-single digits, really.
Finally, inflation, interest rates, and the cost of living crisis. Those have been the main risks that investors have been trying to navigate over the last year or so. However, more recently, in the UK, that is, fiscal and monetary policy uncertainty has also been thrown into the mix. What other risks are you watching out for as the year progresses?
From my point of view, the other risk out there is obviously Russia-Ukraine. If there is a material escalation there, then it needs to be mindful as well. That's a risk that we can't control. We can't really analyse. It's very difficult to have a view on that and how it resolves itself. For the other risks that we've talked about, they're kind of normal risks that we've generally seen historically and previously, and we can kind of start to try and price that into the valuations that we pay. Certainly when you look at the valuation in the UK market, feels like UK market trading on sort of 9x earnings. A lot has already been discounted in some of those fears. And as we all know, UK or equity markets generally bottom before the economy does. Clearly, the UK economy is likely to go into recession, but the UK market will typically trough 6 to 9 months before the bottom of the economy. You know, if you just listen to the risks out there, you probably wouldn't go near the equity market. But I think for us as professional investors, we've got to weigh that up against the valuations we can pay today. And when you look across the UK market, the opportunity set has materially increased given the falls we've seen in share prices and the attractive valuations we're seeing. But it's about staying disciplined to our investment process, looking for those good quality companies, whether cyclical or not, that have got strong balance sheets, good free cash flows, that can grow their dividends in the longer term. As I said, I think that opportunity set has materially increased. We're actively looking at some of those opportunities going forward.
Great. Well, that's all we have time for today. David, thanks for joining us.
Pleasure. Thank you for having me.
And thank you for listening. If you enjoyed this podcast, please subscribe, rate, review, and share this with anyone you think will also find this interesting. If you want to learn more about investment trusts, we have a wealth of information available on our website, which you can find in the show notes.
Important information, not for onward distribution. Before investing in an investment trust referred to in this podcast, you should satisfy yourself as to its suitability and the risks involved. You may wish to consult a financial advisor. This is a marketing communication. Please refer to the AIFMD disclosure document and the annual reports of the AIF before making any final investment decisions. Past performance does not predict future returns. The value of an investment and the income from it can fall as well as rise, and you may not get back the amount you originally invested. Tax assumptions and reliefs depend upon an investor's particular circumstances and may change if those circumstances or the law change. Nothing in this podcast is intended to or should be construed as advice. This podcast is not a recommendation to sell or purchase any investment. It does not form part of any contract for the sale or purchase of any investment. We may record telephone calls for our mutual protection, to improve customer service, and for the regulatory record keeping purposes.
Issued in the UK by Janus Henderson Investors. Janus Henderson Investors is the name under which investment products and services are provided by Janus Henderson Investors International Limited. Reg number 3594615. Janus Henderson Investors UK Limited. Reg number 906355. Janus Henderson Fund Management UK Limited. Reg number 2678531. Henderson Equity Partners Limited, Reg number 2606646. Each registered in England and Wales at 201 Bishopsgate, London. EC2M 3AE and regulated by the Financial Conduct Authority and Janus Henderson Investors Europe S.A. Reg number B22848 at 2 Rue de Bitburg. L 1273 Luxembourg and regulated by the Commission de Surveillance du Secteur Financier.
Janus Henderson. Knowledge Shared and Knowledge Labs are trademarks of Janus Henderson Group PLC or one of its subsidiaries. Copyright Janus Henderson Group PLC.
Discrete year performance percentage change. Updated quarterly, 30th of September 2021 to 30th of September 2022. Share price minus 6.13%. NAV minus 6.53%. 30th of September 2022 to 30th of September 2021. Share price 37.17%. NAV 27.17%, 30th of September 2019 to 30th of September 2020. Share price minus 22.59%. NAV minus 16.70%, 30th of September 2018 to 30th of September 2019. Share price 5.35%. NAV 4.67%, 30th of September 2017 to 30th of September 2018. Share price minus 1.83%. NAV 1.91%. All performance, cumulative growth and annual growth data is sourced from Morningstar. Source, at 30th of September 2022. Past performance does not predict future returns. The value of an investment and the income from it can fall as well as rise, and you may not get back the amount originally invested. Yield, the level of income on a security, typically expressed as a percentage rate. For equities, a common measure is the dividend yield, which divides recent dividend payments for each share by the share price. For a bond, this is calculated as the coupon payment divided by the current bond price. Gearing. Gearing is the measure of a company's debt level. It is also the relationship between a company's leverage, showing how far its operations are funded by lenders versus shareholders. Within investment trusts, it refers to how much money the trust borrows for investment purposes. Cyclical. Companies that sell discretionary consumer items, such as cars, or industries highly sensitive to changes in the economy, such as miners. The prices of equities and bonds issued by cyclical companies tend to be strongly affected by ups and downs in the overall economy, when compared to non-cyclical companies. The rating, when the market changes its view of a company sufficiently to make calculation ratios such as P substantially higher or lower, this a re-rating. NAV, the total value of a fund's assets less its liabilities. Credit spread, the difference in the yield of corporate bonds over equivalent government bonds. Monetary policy, the policies of a central bank, aimed at influencing the level of inflation and growth in an economy. It includes controlling interest rates and the supply of money. Monetary stimulus refers to a central bank increasing the supply of money and lowering borrowing costs. Monetary tightening refers to central bank activity aimed at curbing inflation and slowing down growth in the economy by raising interest rates and reducing the supply of money. Free cash flow, FCF, represents the cash a company generates after accounting for cash outflows to support operations and maintain its capital assets. Unlike earnings or net income, free cash flow is a measure of profitability that excludes the non-cash expenses of the income statement and includes spending on equipment and assets as well as changes in working capital from the balance sheet.